From theunce.com, this is the Unce Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunce.com.
Hello and welcome to the Unce Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. My guests today are Preston Buteau and Matt Harris of Mississippi's live electronic quintet, Zugma. Drummer Matt Harris and keyboardist Preston Buteau are joined by guitarist Brock Bowling and Justin Hasting, along with bassist Ryan Nall. For the past few years, Zugma has been touring nonstop around the country, just gigging like crazy and scrapping to build their fan base. More than a year ago, they released Recreational Vehicles, which is available for free on their website, zugma.net. And we'll hear some of those tracks from that album throughout the program. 2011 has been a breakout year for the band. Over the past couple of weeks, they've played Glowing Souls and Camp Bisco 10. This weekend, they're at the Big Up, and next weekend, they'll be playing Rootwire in Logan, Ohio. Today's episode is brought to you by the Big Up Festival, taking place today through Saturday in upstate New York. The massive grounds of Sunnyview Farms in Ghent, New York will house the Polish Ambassador, Yodo, Big Gigantic, Digital Tape Machine, The Works, and host band Higher Organics, as well as today's guest, Zugma. The event is not sold out. You still have a chance to catch an amazing weekend of music for a low, low price. Check them out on Twitter for updates at Big Up Festival. All right, let's get to the interview with Matt Harris and Preston Buteau of Zugma. Before we start talking about Zugma as a whole, I'd like to first get into each of your backgrounds. Preston, let's go ahead and start with you. Tell me about what music you were listening to as a kid, the first time you sat down behind a keyboard. Tell me sort of how you became a musician, essentially.
Yeah, when I was real young, probably from the age of, I would say, I can't even remember, but it was like 6 to 10 years old, I took piano lessons, you know, classical piano lessons. And honestly, like I could give a shit about, you know, I guess at that point, you know, I didn't care at all, you know, about the piano. It was more of what my parents wanted me to do it kind of thing. So I didn't really have much say in the matter.
I think that's pretty typical.
Yeah. It definitely happens. You know, it seems like it happens a lot. So, you know, after that, I basically, you know, was just like, nah, I don't want to do this. And I started playing saxophone for a little while, then kind of didn't play anything, then kind of played guitar, but, you know, he doesn't. And then I guess when I was 19 or 20, about a year before I met up with all the Zugma guys, I started, you know, I picked the piano back up. I bought a fairly nice, I guess, just like, you know, workstation keyboard. Got a good deal on it. Just started playing it a lot, and, you know, every day, all the time. And basically was playing a lot of just blues stuff. I mean, I was just listening, just on a heavy blues kick. And then, you know, I met all these guys. I met Matt and Justin, I guess, through our old bass player. You know, we did a couple jam sessions, and you know, it's just history from there, I guess.
Matt, do you have a similar background? Did you have any classical training on any instruments, or like a lot of drummers, did you just pick it up, have the natural rhythm, and go from there?
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess early on when I was younger, I guess my mom was a huge fan of Elvis, so that kind of rubbed off on me. That was my first introduction to music probably was Elvis and my Buddy Holly. I guess at that point, you know, I got interested in the guitar and I tried taking guitar lessons, and it was something I wanted to do, but at the time I was so young, I didn't really, you know, want to put in the effort and the time into actually learning it. So that lasted about, you know, 2 weeks before I gave that up. And then, you know, I mean, I still enjoyed music and listened to music a lot. And as I started getting into, like, you know, I guess middle school, you know, I got into like Nirvana and, you know, 311, some bands like that. And then high school, kind of got more into like the counterculture movement and, you know, like the Dead and, you know, Pink Floyd, Fish, some, you know, bands like that. But I guess when I was like in like eighth and ninth grade, I took interest in the drums. And yeah, I did kind of have like a natural rhythm for it. My cousin had a band, and their drummer left his kit set up over at my grandfather's house where they'd practice. And I kind of, you know, would get on there and play around. And I was like, hey, I kind of like this, and, you know, can kind of do it already. So, you know, I started taking some lessons from a guy in Memphis, and, just kind of learned the fundamentals and everything. Did that for about a year and just went with it after that. Played in some bands in high school. And then me and Justin started playing in a kind of like a hill country blues-ish, like rock kind of band in college. And we started getting more experimental and wanted to do something, different. And I guess that's when we were, about the same time we were getting into like, electronic scene.
I'd like to hear from both of you how you were sort of introduced to electronic music. It seems like you had a background rooted very much in the classics, classic rock. You've got blues, and sort of the jam culture with Bish. How do you then make the leap to electronic music?
Actually, man, I guess Justin actually was one that kind of like turned me on to it. He was listening to Signal Path, and I think he'd also talked about STS-9 when they were there first coming up. He was like, you gotta check out this band, and so he was kind of turning me on to some music like that, and that just kind of opened up many doors to a lot of artists that now I really enjoy, and about all I listen to really now anymore is a lot of electronic music, and a lot of jazz, funk, fusion stuff from the 70s, Billy Cobham, Herbie Hancock, stuff like that. I'm trying to forever.
Sure. Oxford, Mississippi seems like an unlikely place for a band such as yourselves to germinate. I guess with STS-9 having sort of a hold on the electronic scene in the South, is that where a lot of kids are getting turned on to maybe Livetronica or electronic music in particular? Just tell me what the scene's like there. I imagine you guys sort of stick out like a sore thumb.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely used to be that way. I mean, I feel like at least when we first started, I mean, this town was just overrun with bar bands and the hill country thing and the blues thing and the acoustic, solo blues, man, and just,
R.L. Burnside, the All-Stars, stuff like that.
And then, I mean, I think that's what helped us out so much when we first started, is we were still, at the beginning a lot, less electronic than we are now, I guess, but we were still so much different than everything else that was going on in the town. And then we would throw these huge parties, right across the county, right outside of the city limits. And I was renting, with about four other guys at a big house out there. It was basically just a big party house. And we would throw these parties, late nights for a lot of bands when they would come into town and stuff, and kids would drive out and we would have 300 to 400 kids out there just, basically doing, no rules, doing whatever they wanted. And we feel like that definitely, it was a lot of fun. It was really, crazy. But we feel like that definitely pushed us a lot and started pushing this type of music, to where a few DJs started popping up and people started talking a little bit more about electronic music and that sort of thing. A couple of years ago, or probably 3 years ago now, the Lyric opened up in Oxford, which is, just a great music venue. And, they just started bringing in just, a lot of the bigger, a lot of big acts in general, but really, a lot of, the Sound Tribes and the Disco Biscuits and just more electronic things like Girl Talk and that sort of thing. And it just started, really sinking into the people here in town. And it's just, blown up here as much as it is everywhere else, I guess.
Let's have a game with happy and sad music. When you hear the happy music, clap. Ready? Let's begin the game.
Mr. Limbic from Zugma's debut album, Recreational Vehicles.
So tell me about the initial formation of the group. It seems like you were all brought together by Justin, and that you had maybe a different concept or a different mission from the beginning as far as what kind of sound you were going to go after, what sort of image that you guys were building for yourself. Tell me a little bit about those early years.
I guess, yeah, like I said earlier, me and Justin played in this hill country blues band. Like Preston was saying, you know, the town was really like, you know, overrun with that, because you had like R.L. Burnside and North Mississippi All-Stars, who are, you know, all like kind of based around here. And so, yeah, like, you know, a lot of people were doing that, and me and Justin were doing that too. And that's, you know, we decided, you know, like, you know, hey, you know, this is fun and all, but we really want to, like, you know, push ourselves and, you know, and get more experimental. And we, you know, played around with, you know, a few different people that summer. I guess we ended up landing on our friend Jason Ball, who was our original bass player. And it was the three of us. And then we had another friend that played percussion, Will Faulkner, and he played with us too. And yeah, the idea was, yeah, we wanted to, yeah, you know, kind of start up, you know, an electronic, you know, band. But I guess at the time, you know, we didn't, you know, have a lot of songs, so we, you know, would learn, you know, some like covers and stuff. And I guess that kind of was the initial start of the band. And then you know, Preston came on board, and you know, we did a couple shows, and you know, we were like, hey, you know, this thing's, you know, really, you know, growing. So we started, you know, pushing more towards the electronic side. I guess like that spring, the percussionist, Faulkner, he was moving back home, so he left. That's when we brought Brock on, and I knew Brock from high school. We were friends then, and you know, played a little music together, and he had, you know, some bands he played in, and I still kept in touch with him, and he was telling me, you know, he's kind of doing the same thing, you know, looking to, you know, get into a more experimental electronic band. And so I asked him to come play with us, and he did some shows at the farmhouse, Preston's old house he was talking about. He did some shows with us there, and we eventually invited him on, I guess, later that spring. And at the end of the year, J-Ball, our bass player, decided he wanted to pursue an education in music and let us know he was going to be attending Berklee the next year. And we knew Ryan from his old band, Energy D. We had done some shows with him, and so we were like, well, we'll call up, you know, Ryan, and, you know, see if he, you know, wants to do this. And I called him up the next day, and he was like, yeah, you know, let's do it, you know. So he came on and started, you know, playing with us. And yeah, so, I mean, I guess at that point, it was really more, you know, full on, you know, an electronic, you know, electronic music project.
Let's then talk about that sort of shift. So you've brought electronic elements into your sound. When does it become a full-fledged effort with songs that are very heavily based in production, and that come from maybe creating tracks on maybe a laptop or programming software versus having maybe a melody from a guitar hook or starting with, I guess, an organic drum beat?
It started, yeah, in a more organic way. And then, and we're, you know, yeah, we were, you know, playing around with like, you know, some sampling and stuff like that. And then once Brock came on board, I think, like, you know, we were all kind of getting more into the production aspect, like you're talking about. Then we actually now had somebody on stage that could kind of, you know, he was playing guitar, and he could kind of, you know, split up, you know, some, like, you know, live sequencing and stuff like that, you know, kind of like, whereas before, when it was a four piece, I feel like it was a little bit harder to, like, focus on the organic aspect in the live setting and trying to balance that with, yeah, with, you know, like, sequencing stuff like that, you know, and production aspect. I feel like, yeah, once Brock came on board is when it kind of shifted more into like more of that aspect. We still have, you know, songs, you know, without any production, yeah, that are very much, you know, electronic. You know, we try to keep it balanced. You know, we don't want to be, you know, one of those bands or acts that, you know, rely on a laptop. You know, that's not us.
Yeah, I mean, if we ever something did happen to, say, our laptop on stage, God forbid. If something did happen, we definitely, I can, you know, I've got enough faith in everybody in the band, and I think we'd do it in each other, where, I mean, we would, you know, we wouldn't be a band that would just be like, oh shit, we're done. We're, you know, that's it for us. You know what I mean? We would, we definitely have enough musicianship in the band to where we could easily finish out a whole show or you know, do what we needed to do. You know, I guess what I'm saying is we don't rely on the computer, but we do think it's a vital part to the sound.
And sure.
We still do write, you know, one of our newest songs is still, you know, I guess written the old fashioned way where it's just jamming out and coming up with some cool, you know, licks and chords and that kind of thing. And, you know, just sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. It's just everything's written a different way. And it's just, you know.
And yeah, I mean, yeah, like I said, and we, you know, still throughout, you know, our live shows, we have, you know, live improvisation without any, like, you know, tracks going or anything like that. It's just straight electronic improv. That's something we really enjoy doing and that we try to, you know, keep as, you know, a staple in our live shows is, you know, we want to give people that live aspect. You know, we like, you know, we love, you know, throwing out crunchy, you know, dance tunes, big beats and, you know, the big sound and stuff. But, you know, at the same time, we like to balance it with the organic element too. And I feel like we really like use the two together, even with the songs where we have like where we, you know, use, you know, maybe some tracks and stuff like that. We there's still plenty of live organic elements going on during that.
On that tip, your songs are very methodical and rely heavily on the build. Do you have built-in evacuation and safety plans? Hey, a crowd isn't feeling your sort of slow progression. Can you hit the eject button and change course, or are you sort of locked into a structure? It seems like you have the sort of freedom to move, even though you are relying in part on laptops and pre-produced material.
Yeah, I mean, most of it, we pretty much can always pull out of a part, I guess, if we need to. I mean, there's certain things where it's kind of a shorter part that it like that does have like a laptop track behind it that kind of sets up the next part. But as far as like the epic builds and, you know, the tension builders and all that sort of thing, I mean, that's basically just all based off of feeling. And then we kind of, you know, ultimately in the end, I mean, it's Matt's call basically when we're on the stage. I mean, when he makes the change, I mean, we follow him, you know what I mean? If he's not feeling it and he kind of gets the vibe that we're not feeling it, then he'll, you know, he'll maybe shorten the section or, you know, push us to the next section or something like that.
Matt, I wonder, do you feel like you're freed up from having to be the sole rhythm provider as a result of all the synthetic percussion that can be injected from the other members?
Yeah, I mean, like he was saying, like, you know, it's all very... Even with, like, you know, when we have, like, some of the, you know, production stuff going, it's still, you know, very set to where, you know, to where, you know, I can still, you know, fill out the band and the crowd. And, you know, if, you know, Brock, you know, can affect out the track or, you know, loop the track with me, you know, and, like, we kind of, you know, work together on, like, you know, really building that tension and releasing, you know, whenever, you know, we feel it's right, you know. So, yeah, it's, you know, yeah, I never feel like I'm locked into... To, you know, like it's never like, oh, this is it. It's, you know, this certain amount of time. And, you know, if we don't get the tension built here, then that's it. You know, it's always, you know, we can fill it out and extend it or shorten it however, you know, we feel.
While we're talking about the live show, let's talk about Jerry Dale Blackburn, because from the looks of it, he functions as a member of the band. The lighting design is such an integral part of the Zugma performance.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely, you know, just as much a part of this as we are. I mean, there's, as far as I'm concerned, there's six of us. You know, we're all on the road together. We're best friends. We give each other a lot of shit all the time. We take a lot of shit and we have a good time. And, you know, as far as like the live show, I mean, yeah, without our light rig, I mean, you know, without Jerry, you know, behind it, it just wouldn't be
the same.
An electronic show, yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be the same. It's just vital. It's something that we've actually been focusing on almost since we started. We bought a cheap-ass light rig, like, you know, 3 months into our, you know, band's forming, I guess, and just been upgrading and upgrading ever since. And definitely, like, you know, it's just a huge part of the show, and, like, you know, I can't say enough about what Jerry does, you know, with the lights and just the production on stage.
Yeah, I mean, it's added a whole other element to it, and he knows the tracks, and, you know, he knows, you know, our songs and stuff, and he you know, can kind of, like, you know, like we were talking earlier with the tension and release, he I feel like he, you know, is on point with us on that too. You know, he knows when to chill everything out or, you know, get, you know, real crazy with him. You know, he's got a really good niche with that.
step away from Zugma for a moment. If you're a liberal, hippie, commie, tree hugger like myself, you probably have come across Justin Vernon's Bon Iver on NPR or in Time Magazine. Friend of the show, Derek Van Scoten, took it upon himself to remix the band and the man who is getting a lot of attention of late. You can catch DVS along with Zugma at this weekend's Big Up Festival. Here's his remix of Bon Iver's Perth. With his remix of Bon Iver's Perth. And now for something completely different. Bass Nectar's newest album, coming out in just a few short days, will be available on Alpha Pup August 2nd. Here's Upside Down from Divergent Spectrum. Bass Nectar with Upside Down from Divergent Spectrum, out Tuesday on Alpha Pup. Let's wrap things up with Zugma. Let's then take the conversation back to the studio. Tell me about, I guess it's been more than a year now, the release of Recreational Vehicles. First of all, how long was that process from start to finish when you said, hey, we're going to produce an album? How long did it take until you had it in your hands? I imagine, you know, a smaller independent band, you got to find time to record when you can. You got to work on being on the road as well as composing in between your various gigs. Tell me about that process.
Well, I guess for Recreational Vehicles, some of the songs we've been kind of filling out live for a little while, and some, we wrote specifically for the album. But I would say, a lot of the writing was done on and off the road up until the time we recorded the album. I guess we did it in, I think, December and January of 2009, 2010. And we recorded at our friend Tom Keha. We recorded at his studio here in Oxford, and he was pretty flexible with us, and we did most of it, most of the tracking in December. And so all in all, I think it took about two months, roughly, I guess, to get all the tracks laid down and the mixing done, and then we sent it off to get it mastered. And I think, it was ready. We released it like in March or April of last year.
Did you have a preconceived notion of what the album would be, or was it just a collection of the best songs you had compiled in a certain time period?
Yeah, we actually, it was definitely, I guess, the latter. Pretty much all the songs that are, I guess, every song on the album was a song that we'd played live before, and just kind of songs we'd written along the way. And we hadn't played that one. But everything else, basically, some of them were newer than others. But what we basically did was we charted out all our songs on a whiteboard in our practice room, and what we said, like, 8 songs we're going to put on the album. We basically went through every member, and we all had like a tally mark for the songs we would pick. If it was our choice, and kind of just took the 8 with the most tallies, and then talked it through again, made sure everybody was cool with it, made an order, and that's how it came to be, I guess.
Yeah, we wanted the ones that were on there, you know, we kind of based the decision on, you know, on like, you know, like I feel like, you know, which songs did we feel kind of like, you know, mesh together in the more, you know, in the more of a, in the one whole piece, you know, I guess. So like, you know, it was like you said, we you know, went through and like decided, you know, like, you know, do we want this on the album? Does it fit with the album? You know, the, like, kind of like the whole, you know, sound we're trying to go, you know, we kind of wanted to like to have, you know, album that represented like, you know, all elements of this, you know, like the electronic and the organic and the fusion of both. And yeah, so that was kind of how it all came together.
And I imagine these tracks have taken on a life of their own, injected back into the live setting. And I imagine your audience demands to hear certain songs that were, you know, their favorites from the album. So going from the live to the studio and then back to the live, you have to reinterpret them, I guess, in a multitude of ways.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like every song on the album, if you hear it live, it's going to be a little different. You know, we have sections we'll extend on, new sections that we've added, and even probably in some cases, maybe stuff we've maybe taken out. I'm trying to think, you know, like, but you know, we're, I mean, our song is never, you know, all of our songs, I mean, we always say that, you know, it's never finished. It's never, you know, finished work. You know, we're constantly, you know, going back and just rehashing out stuff, and you know, because you know, we may do something live and be like, hey, you know, that, you know, one night, you know, that really worked, you know, let's go back, you know, and figure that out and, you know, make that a new addition to the song, you know. So they're always changing, and it's never finished. So yeah, we you know, we challenge ourselves to really, you know, make the live show, you know, if you hear the live show and you listen to the album, they're same, but you know, but they're different. You know, you're getting something new at the live show.
That's going to do it for the Yuns podcast interview with Matt Harris and Preston Buteau of Zugma. I'd like to thank them for being on the show, as well as Scott Shapiro with MCP Presents. Zugma will be performing at this weekend's Big Up Festival, going on now in Ghent, New York. Tickets are still available at the gate. Next weekend, Zugma will be traveling to Papadozio's Rootwire Music and Arts Festival, taking place at Kepner's Woods in Logan, Ohio. Coming up next week on the program, a special Camp Bisco interview with Marty Party from UNS correspondent Carrie McNeil. We've also got Alicia, Blue Tech, and Antenna coming up on future installments of the UNS podcast. On the UNS.com contest front, we've got tickets for Boombox and Elliot Lip at the Bowery Ballroom. We have dubstep pre-parties and after-parties for Lollapalooza, and you can still win festival passes to Camp Barefoot, Liberate, and North Coast Music Festival. All you have to do is visit the UNS.com, sign up, click on contests, figure out which show or shows you want to attend for free, and then press the enter button. Couldn't be more simple. Please visit the UNS.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review, tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, you'd like to be a guest on the UNS podcast, or you'd like to sponsor an episode, contact me at anand@theuns.com. That's ANAND @theuns.com. We'll catch you next week.